Hello, this is Dave Jeffrey welcoming you to Optimal Life. It's brought to you on the RPH Network. In today's program, we're going to look at the subject, partners or not, is it best to include them in your age pension assessment? And pelvic floor exercises, they can improve your sex life and a whole lot more. And coffee, as we get older, we probably tend to have more time to have a cuppa. Well, how much should you or should you not have? And making out your will, we'll look at how to avoid common mistakes. First up today, it's partners or not, singles for age pension. This is taken from the money section of the March Senior Newspaper. It's written by Noel Whittaker, and it comes in a question and answer form. The question, I will be 66 earlier this year, and I'm in a long-term de facto relationship with my partner. My partner is 66. We have been and remain financially independent of each other. That is, apart from a shared ownership of our home. I am not working now as I assist my elderly mother in an aged care facility. My partner works as a sole trader and hopes to keep working until he is 70. He earns $25,000 a year. I have $300,000 in super, which I'm accessing fortnightly. I also have $10,000 in savings. My partner has $400,000 in shares. Our home is valued at $1.3 million. Should we apply for the age pension as a couple or individually? Well, now that's a very good question, and the answer is you are a couple, so do not have the option of applying for a pension as a single person. Now that's interesting. He states there you are a couple. The assets and income of both of you will be combined and your eligibility will be based on that. Your total financial assets are some $710,000. I would assume that your personal effects would be $30,000 at the most. Your home is exempt as an asset. If those assumptions are correct, you should receive a pension of $204 a fortnight plus all the benefits when you each reach pensionable age. Your partner would receive a similar amount. As your partner is now 66, he should have reached pensionable age and be eligible for a similar amount immediately. Now, I'm just going to add a reader's note here. I think this is important. He says, if you go to the deeming calculator on my website, you'll find that financial assets of $710,000 will be deemed to be earning $547. That is, every fortnight. Now, the website he's got here, and the deeming calculator, you go to www.noelwhittaker.com.au. That's all one word, and I'll say it again at the end. The article goes on to say, your partner's income would be about $961 a fortnight. That is, giving your combined income for test purposes of about $1,500 a fortnight. The income test would allow you to go to a pension of $413 a fortnight each. You will both be asset tested because Centrelink uses the test that provides the least pension. Consequently, your partner's income will not be taken into account for pension purposes. Once you are asset tested, any income you receive is irrelevant unless you exceed the income test thresholds. Well, there you are, whether to go to partner or singles. He said you're a couple if you're living together. Go as a partner. Now, some very good assistance that he has here. He says, go to my calculator. It's called a deeming calculator. Simply www.noelwhittaker.com.au. That's just one word. www.noelwhittaker.com.au. Okay, next up we're going to look at pelvic exercises. They can improve your sex life, it says. How to find and exercise your pelvic floor muscles. And fellas, it's not just an issue for women. Do you wet yourself a little when you laugh, cough, or sneeze? then you are among one in three women and many older men who have weak pelvic floor. Now, many people just put up with the problem. This is due often to embarrassment or thinking that it's an inevitable result of childbirth, menopause, or aging. But continence specialist Jane Simpson is on a mission to break the taboo. She wants to highlight that you just do not have to accept this as stress incontinence or as a result of having a weak pelvic floor. Why? Because there are things that you can do about it. She says while we've almost become comfortable discussing periods, pelvic floor issues are still frequently ignored. This is despite the fact that they affect one in three women. This absolutely has to change, she says. Well, we're going to outline 10 things that everybody should know about their pelvic floor and how to keep it strong. First, your pelvic floor is easy to find. Okay, if you're a woman, sit on any hard surface with your feet flat on the floor. Lean slightly forward with your vulval area in contact with the hard surface. Then try to lift the area around your vagina and anus away from whatever you are sitting on. These are your pelvic floor muscles contracting. Now, men, you should sit or lie and squeeze the ring of the muscle around the back passage as if you're trying to stop passing wind. Then relax that muscle. Squeeze and let go a few times until you're sure that you've found the right muscle. Try not to squeeze your buttocks. Number two, your pelvic floor muscles are the bottom of your core. Acting like a hammock, pelvic floor muscles provide the main support for your pelvic organs. Without them, your internal abdomen and pelvic organs would simply fall out. Your pelvic floor muscles are wrapped around the urethra, vaginal, and anus in women, and in men, the urethra and the anus. They're able to contract when you cough or sneeze. This is to help you stay continent and prevent leaks. Number three, the important one, how to do pelvic floor exercises. It's important that everyone does pelvic floor exercises, even if you don't currently have a problem. Ms. Simpson says it can happen at any time of your life. Be prepared to start working on your muscle training straight away. Now, either lying with feet flat on the floor, sitting or standing, draw up your pelvic floor muscles. Squeeze and hold for a count of 5 if possible. Then let go and count to 5. Repeat the process 5 times. Do this 3 times every day. Keep practicing and hold for a longer time until you can contract your muscles for 10 seconds each time. Once a day, also do a series of 10 short, sharp contractions. This will help you maintain control when you sneeze or cough. Number 4. High-impact sports can cause pelvic floor problems. A recent review concluded that sports practices increase the prevalence of urinary incontinence with high-impact sports. These can cause incontinence. Have you stopped running, playing tennis, or any other sport that you really enjoyed because you're worried you might have an accident? If so, pelvic floor exercises will help you here. Number 5. Pelvic dysfunction is not just about stress incontinence. Do you frequently or urgently need to go to the toilet? Does the sight of your front door trigger an urgent need to pee? This is called incontinence, and it's thought that 25 to 45% of women do suffer from this. Item 6. Childbirth is a common cause of pelvic floor dysfunction. Every woman needs to do pelvic floor exercises after having a baby. This is whether you had a vaginal delivery or a cesarean section. While common, it is a myth that it's normal to leak if you sneeze after having a baby. Number 7. Half of women over 50 have some degree of prolapse. A prolapse happens when weakened pelvic floor muscles and weakened vaginal wall lead to one or more of the pelvic organs, often the bladder, bulging into the vagina. You may have no symptoms and it's only noticed on a routine smear test. Or it may feel like you're sitting on a ball and you have a heavy feeling in your vagina. It's not normal or right just to accept a prolapse as a normal part of aging. Ms. Simpson says, whether your prolapse is big or small, do not just ignore it and hope that it will go away. Start working on your pelvic floor muscles straight away. Number 8. Pelvic floor exercises are good for your sex life. They are very important for sex as they help increase the blood supply to the vagina and the penis, improve your muscle tone, and help maintain nerve activity. This results in an improved sexual sensation and satisfaction. Like any exercise regime, if you have strong muscles, you feel good about yourself. She says, I'm sure we've all boosted by a long walk or a great workout. Well, the same is true for your vagina or your penis following pelvic floor exercises. Number 9. Men have a pelvic floor too. In general, the male pelvic floor behaves better than the female one. This is largely due because men do not have babies. However, about a third of men aged over 50 have some form of lower urinary symptoms. And the final item says, pelvic floor dysfunction can start at the menopause. Women are warned not to neglect their pelvic floor around the menopause. This is when estrogen levels start to fall. Estrogen is important for keeping the pelvic floor ligament strong and elastic. So, when the levels of hormone drop, these ligaments become thinner, they become weaker and less resilient, and the pelvic floor problems are more likely to occur. Well, a very interesting article there on pelvic floor exercises, and fellas, we need them too, and it says they can improve your sex life. In a word, what it is, you flex the muscles or tighten the muscles around the anus and the vagina area, as opposed to the buttocks. So you can do them any time, day, night, or wherever you are walking around. You're listening to Optimal Life on the RPH Network, and we are now going to ask a question that's been around for a long, long time. Coffee consumption, yes or no? Probably as we get a little older, we've got more time to have that extra cuppa. Well, be careful. Excess coffee consumption can increase the risk of heart attack disease. Scientists discover the point where drinking coffee becomes a risk to your health. It's taken from the net, written by Ben Hocking. How many cups of coffee do you drink a day? It says last year it was reported on the fact that drinking coffee 3 times a day could prevent clogged arteries. But is there a point where consumption starts to lose its positive effects? Where it can actually start to harm your heart? Well, according to the latest research, there is definitely a tipping point for coffee consumption. That point is 6 cups a day. I'm going to say that again. There is definitely a tipping point for coffee consumption, and that point is 6 cups a day. Coffee 3 times a day can prevent clogged arteries, but be careful. A genetic study at the University of South Australia found that long-term heavy coffee consumption, i.e. 6 or more cups a day, could increase the amount of lipids or fats in your bloodstream. These significantly heighten the risk of cardiovascular disease. The research also found that the more coffee you drink above 6 cups a day, the greater the risk of heart disease. This is explained by the University of South Australia's Professor Eline Hyponen. Professor said there's certainly a lot of scientific debate about the do's and don'ts of coffee. While it may seem like we're going over the old ground, it is essential to fully understand how one of the world's most widely consumed drinks can affect us. It can impact on our health, the professor said. Now, they went on to say, high levels of blood lipids are a known risk factor for heart disease. Interestingly, as coffee beans contain a very potent cholesterol-elevating compound, this is called cafestol, it was valuable to examine them together. Cafestol is mainly present in unfiltered brews such as French press, Turkish and Greek coffees. But it's also in espresso, the base for most barista-made coffees, including lattes and cappuccinos. Now, the article goes on to say there is no or very little cafestol in filtered and instant coffee. So, with respect to the effects on lipids, those are good coffee choices. I'm just going to say that again. The good coffees are the filtered and the instant ones. The implications of this study are potentially broad-reaching. It is especially important for people with high cholesterol or who are worried about getting heart disease to carefully choose what type of coffee you drink. Importantly, the coffee lipid association is dose-dependent. The more you drink unfiltered coffee, the more it raises your blood lipids. This puts you at greater risk of heart disease. The findings from this study align closely with Norwegian research last year. It found that people who drank filtered coffee had a 15% reduced risk of death compared to people who drank no coffee at all. Now, I'm going to say that again. The findings in the Norwegian study found that people who drank filtered coffee had a 15% reduced risk of death compared to people who drank no coffee at all. While the jury may be still out on health impacts of coffee, the professor says it's always wise to choose filtered coffee, that is, whenever possible. Be wary of overindulging, especially when it comes to a stimulant such as coffee. With coffee being close to the heart for many people, it's always going to be a controversial subject, the professor explained. Okay, that article there, coffee, yes or no? Well, it's interesting. There is a tipping point, 6 cups a day, no more? Now, the other thing is, the best coffees to drink are filtered and instant coffees. Cappuccinos, etc., they're all right. And the other thing at the end, the Norwegian study said that people who drank filtered coffee had a 15% reduced risk of death compared to people who drank no coffee at all. So what's the outcome? Less than 6 cups of filtered or instant coffee a day is the way to go. Okay, as we get a little older, we start thinking about our will, and so we should. Well, let's have a look at some of the common mistakes when you're writing your will and how you can avoid them. This is taken off the net. It's written by Aaron Zellman. Says, don't leave your loved ones with a mess by failing to deal with these issues. It can be daunting and even overwhelming at times, but writing your will is an essential part of planning your future. We're going to break down some of the most common mistakes we see when writing legal wills and show you how to avoid them. Now, this article is in several different parts. Firstly, forgetting to include all your assets. When writing your will, we think about the tangible assets first. For example, your home or your car. But what about your other assets, such as a bank account, your shares, your investments? While these can form part of your estate and be distributed as a whole, if you would like to gift them to a specific person, it must be clearly outlined in your will. Here's a good one. Number 2, forgetting about your furry friends. Australians love their pets. With around 61% of households reporting at least one furry friend. But what happens to the pets if they outlive us? Under Australian law, they are deemed as an asset and therefore cannot be named as a beneficiary in your estate. However, it is possible to gift them to a loved one who understands and appreciates your pet as much as you do. This is to ensure that they're properly cared for. Number 3, not having valid witnesses. A crucial part of completing your will is ensuring that it is signed by 2 valid witnesses to make it a legally binding document. These witnesses cannot be listed as beneficiaries in your will, nor can they be married or in a legally recognised relationship. They must be over the age of 18. They cannot be legally blind. When signing your will, check the requirements for each state or territory, as they may be slightly different. Now, this one's important. Both witnesses must be present when you sign your will. I'm just going to add a reader's note here. A friend of mine had a will recently, and it was signed by 2 witnesses, but in a different coloured pen. and they assumed that they were not together, and it caused all sorts of problems. So both witnesses must be present when you sign your will. The fourth part, not having the original copy or knowing the location of the original copy. To file for probate and proving the will so that it can be implemented, the executor needs the original copy. So, obviously, make sure that you keep your will in a safe place. Let the executor and family members know where it is. Okay, some tips there on writing your will and how to keep it legal. Don't forget about your pets and furry friends. Make sure you have a valid witness. Must be two, and they must be together at the time of signing it. And don't forget your assets either, like your bank accounts, etc. And the other one is, make sure that someone has the original copy. This is Optimal Life, brought to you on the RPH Network. We're going to look now at the value of homes and the condition that they're sometimes in. Derelict homes are in high demand. This is written by Aidan Devine in the Sydney Morning Herald on the 7th of March. We feel this article is interesting to us older ones. Maybe you have to move out of your home, go into aged care, etc. Or maybe you just do not feel like doing it up and you're worried about it. Well, fear not. Crumbling homes requiring expensive repairs have become hot property. Booming house prices drive a renovation frenzy. Agents are reporting homes unfit for living in have been attracting up to 150 buyers at open for inspections. Prices have been skyrocketing, often well over the better conditioned homes. The popularity of the houses has been buoyed by a perception that house prices will keep climbing. This is allowing renovators to recoup the costs of expensive repairs and make a capital gain on the property. Stone real estate agent Eddie Piddington, who is selling a dilapidated house in Manly Vale, said the increased popularity is amazing. Fixer-upper homes were a symptom that the current housing shortage is exacerbating. He said there's a large segment of buyers who want freestanding homes. But it's hard because prices are high and the stocks are extremely low. He said there are also people who've fallen in love with the idea of renovating. They watch reality TV. They get a false idea of what it's like, so they're encouraged. Adrian William, director of Adrian Savis, is talking a renovator's delight to auction in Marrickville recently. He said the demand had been so strong that vendors increased the price before the sale. They went from $1.2 million to $1.3 million and again to $1.4 million. Data published recently showed that prices for freestanding Sydney homes increased by an average 27%. That's about $27,500 over the past 3 months. Now, we're just going to follow on from that article and make the comment that if your house might be a little old and you might have to move out for some reason or other, going into special care, etc., do not worry if it's a bit dilapidated. Houses, particularly derelict homes, are in demand. They are selling like hotcakes, so good luck with that. We said before, this is Optimal Life, brought to you on the RPH Network. Well, this program is very ably sponsored by a wonderful group, Seniors Rights. They offer free legal advice and some cases free legal representation to us older ones. Your rights, your voice. They offer advocacy, education. It's free and it's confidential. Covers a vast array of legal things, just about everything. Maybe having trouble with your body corporate, the nursing home, a neighbour, etc. But another thing they've just started is called the Caring Trio. And it says here, as we get older, we realise we need a bit of help keeping living a safe and fulfilling life. Many of us will turn to aged care. But for some, the process of navigating the government's My Aged Care system, whether from home or residential care, can be daunting. They say accessing My Aged Care can be daunting. Well, that is an understatement. Look, there's plenty of money out there, but it is so hard to access. It's like a blasted minefield. Well, this might be able to help you. It says the navigators. Now, they're a group of people employed by Seniors Rights Service. They can make navigating My Aged Care a whole lot easier. and they can make all the difference. Now, they've been described like the Google map for aged care. The navigators help those thinking about aged care to get where they need to get, and they offer advice about the best way to get there. So today, the navigators are making fewer home visits and more three-way phone and Zoom calls with older people regarding my aged care. Now, it's easy. I'll give you the number in a moment. They'll come and see you, or you can get on the Zoom if you like. Seniors Rights Service provides advocacy, legal and education services for older people in New South Wales, and this wonderful service called the TRIO, How to Navigate My Aged Care. Phone them up, 1-800-424-079. That's Seniors Rights, 1-800-424-079. Help in all legal matters and particularly my aged care. Well, that's all we've got time for today. I hope you've enjoyed the program. Dave Jeffrey saying thanks for being with me. Please remember, as we often say, let us know what you'd like in this program. Any more of something or any less? We'd love to hear from you. Our number, Sydney 02-9518-8811. Love to hear from you and your comments. Look forward to your company again soon. Bye now.